everyone to our weekly CX podcast. Today, joining us, we have Bill Kirst out of our organizational change management practice here at West Monroe Partners. Bill, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mike. Good afternoon, Paul. How are you?
Great. Thanks for joining us, Bill.
You're welcome. Great to be here.
So our topic today is all about how do we manage change for CX transformations? And Paul and I started diving into kind of moving towards a customer-centric culture, but we thought it'd be great to have a real change management expert come in and walk us through what you've seen, Bill. So with that, I thought it might be good just to have you introduce yourself a little bit to our team and to our listeners, and you know how long you've been here and kind of your focus in change management. What, you know, the old consultant, what is it you say you do here? From the old 90s cult classic, Office Space. You know, it'd be great just to get a little bit of background on yourself.
Great. Thanks, Mike. So again, I'm Bill Kirst. I actually lead up our change management practice here on the West Coast. So I live in Seattle. So we've got multi-city going here today, San Francisco, Chicago, Seattle. I've been here at West Monroe about a little more than a year and a half, I think. The time has flown pretty quickly. When I was brought on board, we were actually, as a company, we wanted to stand up a change management practice here on the West Coast, because we have seen a lot of activity from clients and customers out here, frankly, struggling with change. Just the pace of change with technology, I'm sure we'll talk about shortly. Customer expectations have just taken a lot of industries and companies in a different direction, and people are just trying to keep up with that. So when I was brought here to West Monroe to start the change management practice here on the West Coast and really oversee Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles growth in change. And I've had the opportunity to work with some amazing clients, do a lot of thought leadership. And you know, when people say kind of like, what is change management? I like to use the old adage of, can you explain it to your mom, your grandmother, or maybe a niece or nephew? And I'll cite a colleague of mine from Johns Hopkins University, where I sit on a board there for their alumni council. And she said one time when she explained change management to her five-year-old daughter, her daughter said, so you're a doctor for businesses. And it was a good way to describe it, because at the heart of what we do is we help people solve problems, or we help people get better in their organizations in managing change. It's really an honor to get to work with people, coach people, support people through any change that they're going through. So we see a lot of process-driven change, obviously technology-driven change, and then the people side of change is probably where I am most passionate about, working with people every single day to turn big problems into small problems, make them approachable, and get from point A to point B.
Awesome. And if I recall, you also have your own podcast that you've been starting. Just want to let those that are listening here get a chance to listen to yours. So what's the title of it called again?
So it's actually called Coffee and Change. So it's very similar. Great minds think alike. And the concept really came about probably a number of years ago for me. But one of the great things of coming to West Monroe is we do have that startup culture, sort of that entrepreneurial spirit. So when I came to West Monroe, the great thing about it was I said, hey, I've always wanted to start a podcast. And I said, great, go do it. So I started Coffee and Change. And what it is getting people together, usually just an interview with one person. And over the time it would take to have a cup of coffee or tea, basically talk about change in the world, in your work, and in your life, in those three lenses. And I try and mix it up to meet with different people from different industries, different generations. I know we'll talk a little bit later about Generation Z and you know, millennials in the workplace. And I'm trying to be very deliberate about having many different voices and perspectives, because one thing we are all united by is change is hard. It's like a human reaction to resist it. And so talking to people and getting their perspectives on how they're doing it, what they're balancing, my goal is to share that with not only our colleagues, but our customers and clients. And so I think I've recorded about five of them. We have two published presently, two more coming up soon, and quickly scheduling more folks for the rest of the year. So awesome. Excited to tell people about that.
Excellent. Well, anyone listening to this, go check out Bill's podcast. And where can they find it?
Yeah, so I've got it up. So if you're tuned into Wes Monroe's blog, we actually do blog posts around some of the episode launches. Again, it's called Coffee and Change. If you look up Bill Kirst, my name, K-I-R-S-T is the last name. You just type in Coffee and Change in Google. I believe it's one of the first ones that pops up, which is pretty awesome in an SEO world. But it's on SoundCloud right now. We're going to be moving some of those episodes to iTunes and the Google Play Store as well as we get about 5 or 6 episodes in. So
great. All right. Well, let's jump into it. So managing change for CX transformations, you've talked about how there are change around different things, people, process, technology. Well, when we look at customer experience transformations, all of that's changing, right? It's the entire ecosystem that is actually shifting. And it's an entire mindset of you're literally moving and putting a customer in the center of everything that's going on.
Yeah.
So last week, Paul and I talked a little bit about around that building a customer-centric culture and this idea of, everything from hiring, how you hire to how you train to how you recognize your people, all that changes and there's a shift, as it comes to through the lens of the customer. So let's just start with this question. What are some different tools that organizations can use to help begin to drive and manage this change? I mean, there's so much going on. So, you mentioned taking big problems and making them smaller. How do they start to kind of bring this stuff together?
It's a great question because as you described, all of these things are firing at the same time. So it's not like the customer expectation comes into us or anybody that's going through an industry change and says, oh, we're going to be patient while you work through all of those pieces to get us what we want. Frankly, on day one, they want it all to be figured out. So when you ask about different tools and different techniques, one of the things I think has been really powerful that I've seen here, and I recently wrote a blog about it with one of your colleagues, Meredith Berkmeyer, around why CX and OCM or change management make such great partners, because we start from a place of empathy. When you take the position of the customer and try and understand where they're coming from, some of the things that I like to remind my colleagues to do is a listening tour, right? Go around and talk and listen for what your customers are going through, what they're feeling, what they're hearing, what they want. And then the other piece of that, I think, is, as you described, it's you must respond to them, but you don't have to solve everything in one fell swoop. So prioritizing what are some of those changes that you want to take on first. So for example, as you said, hiring is a big piece. If I'm going to an organization, I'm saying to them, hey, you want to be more agile, you want to do things in more of a DevOps way, I can't ignore the fact that maybe they have an entire workforce that has been working a certain way for so many years. And before I can tell them to just change, I probably need to introduce some new talent, new techniques, new faces into their organization to show them some of these ways. It's interesting when we talk about it. I recently wrapped an interview with a gentleman talking a lot about Agile and DevOps and how customer expectations are driving some of this. And we can't forget the fact that, DevOps is a word, but it's two words shoved together. And it's basically saying we're taking two teams, taking the wall out between them and expecting them to operate as if they've been, one big family and friend and a set of friends since day one. That's not the case. But what the customer expects is it's the case. So take some of the guesswork out of it, I would say, and start with a listening tour. Really go and sit with your customer and see what they're going through. Listen to them. And then try and, I always say, meet my customers where they're at to the best of your ability. I know that you and Paul talked about this a number of weeks ago and in previous episodes of, I think about things like Starbucks, right? I use the mobile pay option all the time. I've read a lot about how it did wonderful things for customers in terms of, hey, I want to be able to order it, go pick it up and go. It caused an unexpected issue around supply chain or the way that people line up in the store. It changed my experience as a customer because I now actually, believe it or not, I talk more to my baristas after doing the mobile pay than I did before. And the reason being is because I get up there and I see my name is on a ticket and they call out my name And I look up their name tag and I say, thanks, Tyler, or thanks, Henry, and have a great day. And before you know it, you're having a conversation. So here's a piece of technology that everybody thought was going to reduce the interaction. And it actually increased my interaction with the people side of that experience. So I always tell people to try and one of the best tools you can start with is empathy, and try and understand what your customer is going through before you force any sort of change in an organization, to try and meet the customer, take the guesswork out of it. Just ask them what is it you want? What could work better? And then kind of build off of that cornerstone.
Bill, I have a question for you. You talked, sure, you know, interestingly about you know, changing customers' expectations. There's technology. You talked about innovation. Yep. You talked about DevOps. How do you manage within a company that's got lots of different changes going on at once? We often get lost in our customer experience world, and you know, we're focused on customer experience transformation. But you know, oftentimes you're dealing with two or three kind of major transformations, perhaps going on at the same time.
You know, I'd say I like to take a bird's eye view. So I always try and remind people that as a change management person, part of my job is to step back and way up. So I've got to go way, way up here and look at all of the initiatives that are going on. So, you know, Paul, you talked about, hey, there's process changes. We all recently went through, for example, a technology change on the HR side. So we rolled out a new tool. The tool was great. People are excited about it. Rather than jump right in and start talking about what the tool does on sort of a transactional basis, I stepped back and I thought, okay, if this is going in at this time and in this place, how is it going to affect other areas of what we do every single day, right? It's like if you take a balloon and you push on this side, it's got to go somewhere, right? So when you're managing that change, I always like to try and take a step back or a step up or a couple steps up and say, understand the entire ecosystem of change that we've got going on here. And then the question goes back to leadership, which is, I'm going to ask leaders, help me prioritize. And if I put myself back in the employee's shoes, I'm going to say, if we don't communicate effectively or consistently or clearly, it's going to confuse them. It's going to confuse people in the workforce. It's going to confuse our customers. You know, it's challenging in today's day and age. We've got the, you know, the technology, everything's telling us, coming at us. We keep thinking we got to take on more to respond to all of it. I would say the challenge becomes you have to prioritize based on what you're trying to achieve. And so you've got to engage that leadership. You've got to push back a little bit. You've got to say, this is how big this change is. And maybe even say, where's my workforce at? Where are my customers at? They might be a little fatigued, frankly. And can we take this change and hold it till later? Will it impact us in any way if we maybe hit the snooze button on it? I recently wrote a blog on that where people are saying, where's the snooze button on change, right? I'm not saying I don't want the change. I need an 8-minute snooze,
right,
before I start my day.
Yeah. So you mentioned from a leadership perspective, if you're as a CX leader, and you know, so it's actually a combination of the two things that you're kind of talking about. How do I as a CX leader work with my leadership team to, one, maintain a prioritization? So, right, priorities they shift, but instead of going up, like it's going to go, turn it to 10 on just this one, and then everything else falls to the wayside, versus, well, maybe this is a 7 and this is a 4 and this is a 3. How do organizations at the leadership level manage that? And I, as a CX leader, how do I ensure that, yes, my initiative may fall away a little bit, but I don't want it to get completely lost?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is where we have to trust we have to do a little bit of trust in our workforce. And as you're saying, as a CX leader, you're a CX leader surrounded by a lot of talent throughout your practice and throughout your organization. I think at times what I see is we get all of these initiatives, what appears to be hitting all at the same time. And as a leader, it's challenging because you feel like you almost have to clone yourself or, you know, cut a piece of yourself off to go all to these different initiatives. What I would say is the challenge then becomes we turn back to our workforce and we say, hey, who's passionate about this particular initiative, or who's had experience in this before? I mean, we're all consultants, and the great thing is we come from all different walks of life. So many people may not know, but you know, I served 10 years in the military. So when it comes to like, hey, we need to put something out quickly or get an order out or some leadership piece, people might say, have you done that before? And the answer would be yes. And here's how I might do that. I think we have a real advantage in consulting that we've got a lot of diverse talent and diverse perspective and minds. I would say it doesn't all hinge on leaders. The leaders have to then turn to the group of people that they brought on board and say, help us prioritize, help us understand what is most important for you as a young consultant, for you as a principal, for you as an architect, so that we can rack and stack this appropriately. Also, I think you got to leave room for shifting priorities. Frankly, I was talking to a group of students the other day, and I'm teaching over at Seattle U, and we talked about annual reports, and we talked about financial statements, right? Those are snapshots in time. All the things change in a year, and I actually feel bad for companies that kind of are held to writing annual reports, because you set your goals here, and then a year later, you're like, I hope I hit all those, but our priorities changed. And you didn't necessarily have an opportunity to get on the horn with all your shareholders and say priorities changed. So don't do it alone is what I would say to a leader. I would say really turn to your team and say, help me prioritize this and echo it up and then echo it down. Yeah. Does that answer the question, right?
I think so. Paul, did you have any follow-ups?
Yeah, I was going to follow up, you know, thinking about a customer experience leader who has to work with other executives, and, you know, there's a lot of noise for those executives. You know, I think for any customer experience exec, you're always trying to get your executive leadership no one's going to say, hey, we're anti-customer or we want to deliver horrible customer experiences, but there can be cheerleaders, right? Yeah. So we know treating customers is the right thing. And yet we've got other priorities that we focus on and may tell you. And so I'd be curious, you know, when you get leaders who really do need to engage an executive leader leadership group to be more engaged, not just verbally, but, you know, start role modeling, great, mm-hmm. Doing the getting out in front of customers and learning, you know, any tips and tricks for engaging those executives?
Yeah, I mean, I would probably say that as a leader or as an executive, I think sometimes the challenge that people put on themselves is they feel they have to solve it all themselves. So I like to use the example cheerleader, right? We in change management have a concept called a change champion. And that change champion is essentially an influencer, is someone whose voice carries for all the right reasons. You're not necessarily putting it all on them to say, you have to carry this load, you have to boil the ocean, you have to convince everyone of all of the plan. Instead, what you turn to that executive or that change champion and you say, when you walk into a room and you say this, people respond in this way. So I need you to, in this particular instance, I need you to be the you know, call the charge for this. Or you might go to another executive and say, you know what? Your strengths are really, really good with negotiating with a client or negotiating contracts when we're down to that last stage. I need you to come in and do this. I was with our teams. We were recently, and I think you guys did this recently too, the StrengthFinders 2.0. I've revisited that a couple times recently for this exact reason, because we all have different strengths. And if we as a workforce, and also thinking about our customers, can turn those strengths to specific tactical things, it seems a lot easier to approach. So as I mentioned, empathy is my number one strength when I took this test. Empathy is my number one strength. So it means that I can almost feel what people are going through despite not being there with them. So my strength might be, hey, come in and talk to a customer that's really struggling and try and gain their insights. That's where we need you. Another executive might say, hey, I need you to come in and rally the troops, so to speak, get them really excited about this change. And another might be the one that builds the dashboard or builds the projection or the plan around it. So I would say that, you know, in executives, sometimes it's hard to come to them and say, hey, I need your help to do this, as opposed to, you know, your strength is this, and can I ask you to tactically support this larger initiative this way? If you do that, I think they're likely to say yes, and then come back and say, I really enjoyed that, or here's what I learned from that. Can we do this differently, or can I do more? Leadership is lonely, right? Our inboxes dictate way too much of our day. And I think sometimes leaders feel they have to take it all on, solve the whole thing. And I would say they don't, but like you said, a cheerleader, a champion, tell them how to help and then let them help with their strengths.
Great.
Awesome. So Bill, you had kind of started talking about echo up, echo down, getting, being able to explain. And to me, that's the baseline of communication, right? So let's talk a little bit about the importance of communication, how it comes into play when managing any sort of change initiative, especially one as large as a CX transformation.
Yeah. You know, I wrote down kind of just, I was thinking about this and I just wrote down on the board over here, cornerstone. Like communication is cornerstone to anything. So I think a lot of times these changes happen so fast and so frequently in these organizations. And again, this goes back down to a little bit of the leadership thing. It's not like the leaders and those that are driving this aren't thinking about people. It's not like they're not thinking about the workforce or their customers. In fact, I think a lot of conversations are probably happening in their head, and they almost wish that, like, by the power of, you know, mental, we could just think about it, it would transcribe itself in an email, and it would go out to the workforce, and then we'd be good. That doesn't happen, or at least we haven't gotten there in innovation or science yet. Maybe we will someday. We're not that far off. However, in the absence of that, I think it's more important that we communicate clearly and consistently, but probably most importantly, concisely. There's a lot of stuff coming at us, a lot of data coming at us, and we tune out. People just tune out. After a while, you say, I've had enough, and it's a lot of the same. So I think we kind of need to revisit communication and how we do it. I personally think get outside the inbox is the best way. If workforces or organizations have the opportunity to walk around and meet people and do town halls and shake hands and see the expressions of people, great, do it. That's probably where it's going to go the most effective. I also think, you know, we might talk about this a little bit more in the Generation Z millennial part, but I think the workforce, those that are coming into the workforce crave, they just crave a different kind of communication. They want to hear people sharing thoughts. They want people to be vulnerable. They're okay with people saying, I don't have all the answers, but here's what I do know, and I will share it with you transparently. Here's where I need your help. All of those things are opportunities for communication. And most of the time when I think about a transformation or change management, where it starts to fall apart is in the communication. Mm. Because somebody makes assumptions. And in the absence of that communication, you will insert your fears, your hopes, and your assumptions. And that's where a lot of this stuff starts to come apart.
Yeah. Bill, I'm curious, have you any good examples of some creative communicating that companies have done in a transformation that you know, customer experience pros could or leaders could borrow from?
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting that we're kind of doing this in this medium, right? Video casting, podcasting. One of the things that I did see a customer do is they realized they had a workforce that was very saturated during their day, so they didn't have the ability to be at the computer when the communication came across, or be at the desk when they wanted that email to hit so that the person could pick up their head and talk to their peers to the right and left and say, you got this email, what'd you think? And what they ended up doing was kind of this medium, which was a leader got on, they kind of did a recording, very, very short video and or audio podcast kind of thing, and said in their own words, here's the communication that went out. But I'm not just going to read the words of the communication. I'm going to tell you what they are in my words. And then they asked the managers to do the same thing. So we all got the same communication, but the managers all did their, in my own words, this is what it means to me. In my own world, this is how it impacts me. And where the workforce benefited was they not only read the communication, but they got to see a little bit of the world through the eyes of their leader and their manager differently than just what was said on the page. So I'm not looking for myself in a 6-paragraph email that came out from, you know, a mailbox. I'm looking for myself in how I can support my boss and my boss can support their boss. And if I hear it through their own words, or I hear some inflection or some passion around something, that is a conversation opening for me to have with a leader, with a manager. I say the same thing with customers, right? You know, we talked about listening tours or listening hubs, idea hubs. Customers saying, look, we read this from you and this is what it means to me, and going back to what we were saying before, echoing it back allowing people to hear through a customer's lens or through a customer's ears and eyes, this is what it means to me, can help us think more clearly about the words we use. So that was a small example where the communication still went out. Everybody had the same communication, but what they were craving was, tell me in your own words what this means to you. And I would ask the same of customers, tell me in your own words what this change means to you.
Mm-hmm. So real quick follow-up on that. Have you ever found that, and maybe this is the little teeny tiny cynic in me, but just when there's, especially from a customer's perspective, you know, a lot of times customers are kind of like, great, you're telling me about this, but at the end of the day, you know, I still want my product delivered or service to be simple or whatever it might be. So how do you effectively communicate that the, maybe it's more the value, and you know, a lot of times it comes down to the, you know, what's in it for me kind of a thing. So really explaining how, what value they're going to get out of it. But what have you seen work so that way it, you know, kind of lands on the customer in a more impactful way and they kind of get past that cynic response?
I think the best thing for cynicism is honesty and vulnerability. So if a customer can see you as a human and doing your best, and you are showing them, not just telling them, but you're showing them that you're trying, but you're not superhuman. We've got a lot of things on our side, but if you can tell them, I'm working on this, this, and this, and here's where we're falling short, and we know it, and we hear you. I think that can bring down the cynicism a little bit. But on the flip side, I think a little bit of healthy cynicism is a good thing. It's constantly challenging us to say, no, do better for me, and this is why. You want to keep my business, do a little better. I think a healthy dose of cynicism is good, and that's why it's important for those of us that are, you know, serving customers to every once in a while just step out of your own box and go sit with them, go see. You know, one of the things I think is kind of fascinating is today, those that are doing services, you know, consulting as a service, if you will, we constantly step in and out of, I'm a consumer one moment, I'm a consultant the next, I'm a taxpayer one moment, I'm a benefactor the next. I think it's important for us to remember those as we step in and out of those roles. What are expectations and how are they resetting every time? We're not that much different than those that we serve. And if we can remember that and be honest and be vulnerable where it's necessary, I think it takes down that cynicism a little bit. And some of them might even say, hey, you know what? I want to continue to work with you because you don't seem that different than me. And we all come with our shortfalls and our strengths, and we're willing to kind of put those on the table for the customer. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, you already kind of started mentioning some things around the idea of there's a change in the workforce. And, you know, we mentioned millennials, Generation Z are now starting to enter into the world. Well, millennials have been here for a while, but Generation Z, the next iteration. You know, how is that affecting some of the change or at least the approaches in managing change? So that way, especially a lot of these folks are going to be frontline employees, right? That are actually dealing with customers on a day-to-day basis. So just wondering, what have you seen work for them? What doesn't seem to be working or landing with them as well?
Well, I think the most exciting thing about, Generation Z kind of coming into the workplace and, is the sort of pace of change we talk about in terms of, you know, when you think about the number of updates that get pushed to your apps every, you know, let's take Uber for a second, right? Every week they push an update. And most people have kind of gotten used to that in their digital first world. If you think about things like cloud technology, that's all some of these people have known when they're coming to the workforce. So when I think about rolling out like a Salesforce or a Workday or putting a new app on a phone, the thing that I'm most excited about is the Generation Z, they're already there ready for it. They're saying, yeah, this is part of day-to-day life. So in one way, they are already change champions because they're kind of built in for this. Every 6 months, we're going to make a change. And then the other part that makes me excited about it is they've actually come with a lot of ideas. So they're kind of starting in the workplace with, hey, here's here's my perspective, and I have a couple of other ideas that are kicking around in my head. How do I get those out? Where do I share those? What forms do I put those in? They're not asking permission. They're just asking where to direct it. And to me, that's the most exciting part about it. Now, it presents different challenges in terms of how you curate that, and empower it. But I would say they're ready for the change. It's built into their DNA. And that's a huge, huge opportunity. I think on the flip side, it can be a little challenging in the sense that if these changes take longer, and some of these, as we're talking about, if you're changing the way a customer experience happens, or you're changing the strategy, that runway of patience is not there necessarily. And that's, in my opinion, that's a good thing and a bad thing. We just have to approach a little bit differently. So I would probably reach out to some of those people and say, stick with me a little longer. I need you to stay in the game while we work through this. But it is going to be a challenge for them, because they're going to expect, when I say, hey, we're rolling out a system to change the way we do some process, I think they might expect, like, in 2 days, they're going to see something different.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes in corporations and large organizations, it takes a lot longer. So the challenge becomes, do you pair up that Generation Z with someone who's been in the workforce a little longer and share those perspectives and open both sets of eyes and work through the problem? That's where I'm probably going to see the most immediate impact that I'm excited about, but it's also going to be a challenge around patience and, frankly, not losing the talent in the workplace.
Yeah. Well, you kind of mentioned, you know, we talk about their customer experience could either be external customers, so external to your organization, which is a lot of what we're doing, but then there's the internal customer or the employee. I feel like a lot of what organizations need to offer to their external customers also needs to apply to the internal customers and their employees. So we talked about business agility and being able to provide new products and services more quickly. Well, you should be able to do it internally as well. The expectation, there isn't a wall in the expectation. It's the same whether I'm buying from you or I'm working for you.
Yeah, I think that is going to be increasingly, that gap between those two experiences in some ways is increasing. And I worry about that frustrating a lot of talent, right? Because you're right, if you go and in your consumer habits, you know that these things can work really quickly, then you come into an organization and it's like stepping back into the Stone Age. It's a little bit frustrating, right? You're like, I've got to spend 8 hours kind of doing cave drawing kind of stuff. And then I go home and I flip everything to this seamless digital, almost flawless experience. You know, that sort of is like switching your brain on and off, and it can be tiring. And that's the challenge that I think all organizations face right now is, if you're playing catch up, you better catch up really quickly if you want to hold on to the best talent, because they are bringing their day-to-day consumer expectations into the workplace. And if you haven't thought about that yet, you might want to catch up on that.
Awesome. Paul, any follow-up thoughts or questions?
No, you know, we've often talked about employee experience and customer experience going hand in hand. And, you know, as you said that, I was thinking about, you know, every company lives in a more digital world and are really becoming in some ways tech companies. And you know, if your battle for talent now becomes as much about tech and data to compete in the world, and you can't provide that employee experience, it's an interesting kind of piece, because we can apply so many of the customer experience tools to employee experience. Mm-hmm. It makes me wonder, does employee experience almost eclipse the customer experience and as the starting point?
It's fascinating you say that, Paul, because the first place I ever worked was a company called Rosenbluth International. They no longer exist. They were bought out by American Express shortly after September 11th, 2001, because they were a travel management company. And what was interesting about Rosenbluth and the founder was Hal Rosenbluth. He wrote a book called The Customer Comes Second. And it really shocked a lot of people, because they were like, what do you mean the customer comes second? No, the customer always comes first. But his premise was exactly that, which was, if we take care of our employees and we engage our employees in a certain way, they will absolutely pay that forward without even asking us to do it. And it was proven to work. They actually had this amazing month. They would pick August as Employee Appreciation Month. And the whole month was set aside you know, yes, you had to do the work that you did, but it was all set aside about recognizing employees and celebrating employees and having, you know, parties and things like that, so that you could almost fill that bucket of gratitude and engagement. And then it led to this amazing fall quarter and this amazing winter where, you know, that company went off and got great results. So I remember reading that in my first job, thinking, wow, this is a pretty bold thing that this guy, Hal Rosenbluth, is saying, the customer comes second. But then when I got into the workforce and I saw it, it totally made sense to me.
Yeah, Southwest Airlines is like that. They actually unapologetically are employees first. And I've seen companies go both directions. I think they're, you know, there's that becomes an interesting strategic choice that a company makes. The thing that I do like about the employees first, there's an element of humanizing, right? I've got to, you know, it's like love starts within my, you know, my family kind of thing. Yeah. And if I can do that and, you know, and even, you know, I think that there's some interesting predictions out there that, you know, we're getting into the notion of purpose for a company becomes more important. Millennials, as we talked about, care a lot more about what happens out there than just, you know, their job. They want to have a meaningful impact on the world. And so when you kind of combine a purpose, but then bring it internal to start so people really know what it's about, it'd be really powerful going externally as well.
I think it's interesting because even at West Monroe, our first value is people first. And definitely that perspective of focusing on celebrating the employees, like you said, it then directly translates. However, not to be the cynic, but bring up the United fiasco that happened a couple weeks ago, and that first letter that came out from the CEO that was, "We stand 100% behind our employees," and I would imagine that it was there to, I mean, again, if you believe in your employees first, and certainly you're not going to just, you know, to live up to that, you're not going to throw the employee under the bus. But how do you handle that then? Because, I mean, that's slightly, you know, I mean, that's where it kind of might go awry.
I would say it in that instance, it's never at the expense of the customer. So I totally, and I recently spoke about this with one of the classes I teach around that, you know, it took five communications for United to kind of get to the point where they basically said, you know, hey, customer, we care about you. The first one was, we stand by our people. The second one was, we're looking into this. The third one was, hey, there's an investigation underway. I mean, at that point, it was too late. So I would say it's, yes, you want to celebrate your employees and recognize your employees, but you cannot take your eye off the customer experience. And if the customer experience is not aligned or misaligned, all of that other stuff doesn't really matter. The two have to be complementary, and it takes a lot of work to get there. But if you can teach your workforce to constantly think about, again, going back to empathy, what is your customer going through? How does it feel for your customer? Put yourself in the shoes of your customer. I'm willing to bet a lot of those, you know, frankly, a lot of the employees around United Airlines probably had the same reaction that the three of us had and many other people of just, you know, horror. And like, I would never, you know, treat a customer that way. But I think that's why you have to constantly bring it back to that. How is the customer feeling? What is the experience they're going through? And do we align to that? While recognizing our strategy, while recognizing our shareholder desires, while recognizing our employee experiences, nothing should be at the expense of the customer.
Awesome. All right. Well, I think that's a great place to stop our conversation today. Bill, thanks so much for joining. This was a fantastic conversation, and we'll definitely have you back here sooner rather than later. And again, for those listening, please take a chance to listen to Bill's podcast, Coffee and Change. You can find it through the West Monroe blog right now through SoundCloud. And then eventually look for it on iTunes and Google. Paul, anything else?
No, thanks, Bill, so much. Appreciate having you on.
You're welcome, gentlemen. Have a wonderful afternoon. Thanks.
You too.
Take care, guys.
Bye.